Hello, this is Inside Ouch. I'm Emma Tracy, and on board with me today are Lee Kumitat.
Hello there.
And Beth Rose.
Hi.
Now, we've been taking a good look at the news this week and have come up with some of our favourite stories. So shall we start with you, Lee Kumitat? What have you been reading? What stuck with you this week?
The one that caught my eye was this Disabled Access Day that happened on the 12th of March, which has been hailed a huge success. So this is the day sponsored by UN's guide that looks at kind of accessibility of venues, one of the many other guides are available.
Have they just kind of collated all their research from the last one? Is that why that's been in the news this week?
Yes. So the last one was on the 12th of March, and they said 1,000 venues took part. So venues kind of got on board with the concept of the day, which is for disabled people to try something they haven't tried before, and to kind of, you know, incentivize people to go into their stores or their banks or, you know, in some way, just to kind of, I don't know, is a goodwill thing, and for them to try and do something different as well. And they said that 10,000 people took part across 8 countries. So, you know, and that's not bad.
8 countries? I thought it was a UK thing.
So did I.
I took part in the Access Day, you know.
Which one? This year?
This year.
Did you? What did you do?
Edinburgh was one of the very main cities because Ewan's Guide is based in Edinburgh. And I had a disabled friend visiting from London. We travelled to Edinburgh on public transport and we went to the National History Museum and we felt and looked at Roman artefacts for an hour. And that was a bit school trip, but it was really, really interesting to look at spears and shields and then household stuff as well. And then we went to see a film, and I think we were both quite relaxed about going because we knew the audio description equipment, which is the track that runs alongside movies for blind people to tell them what's happening in the silent bits. We knew that track would be working, because often when you go to a film, you're not sure whether the headphones will be working, whether the audio description is working. And we were pretty cool about the fact that it most likely would be because it was Disabled Access Day. And they were so happy to see us at the cinema, and they were saying they'd checked it all and they'd had a couple of people in that day watching something else. It was a nice day and it was a nice feeling, and I enjoyed it and I was glad it was there, you know.
Did you research those venues and knew that they were going to be part of the Disabled Access Day?
Yes, I did. I looked at all the things that had been arranged and the catalogue or the brochure or whatever you would say. And I chose the thing that was on at the time that we could do and that was reasonably easy to get to and something that we wouldn't normally do. So
that's really interesting. And did it feel different kind of knowing that this day was happening and that, as you say, the audio description track would be likely running? And the things that had been laid on for you, did that kind of take the stress out of it?
It did, because I was with a friend who has a different disability to me, who has cerebral palsy, and it's a reasonably big challenge for us to go places together and do things. And we put all our energy into it and we work quite hard to make it work. And this sort of took a little bit of the pressure off because we knew that the audio description was going to be working. We knew that when we went to the museum, there would be things for me to do, because often when I go to museums, it's just full of glass cases and I get quite bored of things just being described to me while other people are actually looking at the item. So,
or you have to give them quite a lot of advance notice that you're coming and plan it, you know, quite a lot ahead.
Yeah, it took quite a lot of pressure off, actually.
Back to the top of the conversation, when Lee mentioned Access Day, I thought, oh yeah, okay, I know what that's about. But actually, what is Access Day about and what made it better for you to go to the museum on that day? What are people more aware of?
Yeah, so disability awareness was on speed that day. Everyone was ultra, ultra interested in you being there and had all their guiding skills brushed up and all that kind of stuff. I guess it's about offering disabled people an opportunity to do things that they wouldn't ordinarily do. And a lot of things are around physical access. So they're pointing out the things in Edinburgh that are physically accessible and that can be made physically accessible, and the things in the other cities where Access Day was happening. So it's very much laying out exactly what a disabled person could do of a weekend if they knew what was out there and had somebody to come with them if necessary, and, you know, the staff were aware and all those kind of things. It's kind of the ideal scenario.
It's not just exclusive to that weekend, that day. This is just a highlighting programme of events, is it, that, you know?
It's a highlighting programme of events, and lots of venues also put on things like touch tours, which is what you would call what I did in the museum. And they would, sometimes it's useful for disabled people on the autism spectrum or with other disabilities to see a place before they go there to do a thing. So they had laid on some tours of theatres backstage and front of house, and, you know, some opportunities for people to really get a feel for a place that they might visit in the future, and that is useful.
So are we saying that we're largely thinking that things like Disabled Access Day are a good idea? Is that the way to do it, or is it to have a Disabled Access Day every month that, you know, was in a different place or something like that? I don't know. What do you think?
Something like a monthly one would be ideal, where all these museums or places of interest kind of knew, okay, the third Sunday of every month, we're going to put our top team out there and make it as accessible and as interesting as we can. A year kind of is such a long time, isn't it, that, you know, 3 months after Access Day has occurred, sort of these different places and venues may sort of forget how to make everything engaging.
So this is it. The only harm Disabled Access Day could possibly do, in my opinion, in its current guise, is to make venues think that they've done enough by taking part in that day, and that they've, you know, they really pull out all the stops. I think they must put on a ton of extra staff.
Yeah.
And
so what you're saying is that they don't have to kind of go, well, actually, yeah, every third Sunday and every month, if we were to go down that route, that's when you can come because you have a disability. Please don't turn up on any other day.
Well,
yes. Because we just won't cope.
This is it. This is the problem. But, you know, you do turn up and they do cope. So I suppose the good thing about Disabled Access Day is that it encourages people to turn up and to do things. And maybe by doing something one Saturday, they might see other things around and say, oh, let's do that the next Saturday.
I've actually found when I first came to this country and I was a happy tourist, no job, no life, just a tourist. And I was wandering about the streets of London aimlessly. The thing that I did was just turn up. And I knew, see, in Australia, it seems to be a little bit, I'm from Australia, everybody, and I'm blind as well, but it seems to be a little bit set up for that, a little bit more set up, so you can turn up and expect that things will be in place for you, like a touch tour or somebody to kind of guide you around. So when I turned up to the UK, I expected that. And I know that people would say, well, actually, you know, we usually ask for 72 hours notice before you turn up and want to touch the stuff at the, I don't know, where did I go, the Tate Modern. But okay, because you're here and we really don't think we should be turning you away, and we will find somebody. And they did, and it was usually good. So I don't know. Is it kind of upon, in some ways, disabled people to have an expectation that these things will happen for them? And so therefore kind of, you know, propelling things forward in that way.
You had the confidence and the wherewithal to get to that place and then to say, I want to touch stuff, and then to say, actually, even though you usually want 72 hours notice, I want to touch stuff now in the nicest possible way. Whereas I think a lot of disabled groups and families with disabled people in them might not necessarily have that confidence, and actually having it laid out for them on a plate once in a while would hopefully build that confidence.
What needs to be provided for a touch tour? Is it someone who's free to spend a couple of hours with you and identify particular objects that you want to touch?
Yeah, and get them out of cases and sort of be able to describe them and put them in context, I guess, as well.
I would have thought, and I would hope, that you should just be able to turn up, actually, because often people who are employed in museums and galleries, they're all exceptionally knowledgeable and interested and are generally happy to talk about all the items and things that general public haven't realised are that interesting. So I don't feel like it's too much to ask that they kind of be prepared to offer a touch tour.
Well, the interesting thing about that is, you know, it does sometimes happen where when I was touring the country, I went to a museum, a transport museum that will remain nameless. And I turned up there thinking, oh, this will be quite exciting. You know, England, it's known for its trains. So I'll go and have a look. And 6 hours later, I wasn't able to escape the clutch.
Oh,
of an enthusiast.
Oh, there is that downside.
There is that downside.
But now you're very knowledgeable on locomotives.
I am, absolutely.
But I think what we are saying is if you can at all and you have the the wherewithal to do it, just turn up and see what happens.
Yeah.
I guess when it's not a wheelchair accessible venue, and that's what Ewan's guide and other guides do, is they point out all the accessible features of a venue. So, you know, it's fine if you're blind to go up and try and get what you want. But if you actually can't get into the building, that's another problem altogether, I guess.
I would like to say, to be fair, I didn't know that the Tate Modern needed 72 hours, and it may not anymore. This was a few years ago. Let's just be clear on that. So
Absolutely.
It wasn't a case of ignoring the rules. It was a case of not knowing they existed and just expecting that would be fine.
Yeah. Which is usually the best way forward.
Absolutely. Yeah. Knowledge is not necessarily power in some cases.
So Beth, what about yourself? What have you been reading this week?
Well, this week it's 100 days until the Olympics kick off in Rio, which makes it approximately 140 days until the Paralympics.
You've been doing your math, haven't you?
Well, vague math. I mean, big guesstimations there. Don't hold me to account on that. And I have been really gripped by the swimming trials for the para team, which took place in Glasgow. It's been full of drama. I mean, I'm into swimming anyway, and the Olympics just adds to that excitement. But you go to any of the kind of news or rather sports pages, and right on the front has been this drama being played out in the swimming pool in Glasgow. Basically, all the swimmers of all the different categories go to these trials not to kind of secure their place, but to try and get the benchmark, which will then put them in the running for an official place on the Rio team, which will be announced next week. But I mean, this week of swimming alone has seen world records fall by the wayside. Ellie Simmons, who a lot of people might recognise her name from a couple of last Olympics and intervening events, and also Bethany Firth, they broke their own world records by quite a considerable amount, like half a second to a second, which is a lot. And then on the other side, you've got Sasha Kindred, who's he's aiming for his 6th Paralympic Games, but he didn't make the benchmark. He didn't get the times he needed. So he's now got to wait and see if he gets picked. So it's been really exciting. And also, I think it's just saying, with all these world records and British records going, you know, surely we must be in good contention to be back on the podium like last time. I mean, it was absolutely brilliant. So I have been enjoying that and all the excitement. And also this week, the kits for the Olympic and Paralympic teams have been unveiled. So Stella McCartney's designed them again. I think I like most of them. There's a few items that I'm uncertain about.
What do they look like?
She's gone for red, white and blue. So the base of all the sort of shorts, t-shirts, trousers are white, with the red and blue design sort of saying Team GB. The bit I'm not sure about is right on the centre of all the t-shirts is a huge shield, which is meant to kind of represent the whole team. But I feel like it's always done in like a dark blue and it kind of obliterates the rest of the design.
Okay.
I'm not sure about that. But generally, it looks quite smart. And also, it's been made out of some brand new material, which is even lighter and more breathable and more flexible than ever.
And thank you for giving me a little jolt of, ooh, I'm very excited now about Rio. Even mentioning those names has just made me really interested again. And I'm now properly looking forward to Rio.
Can I ask you, Beth, would you have been interested in what was happening in Glasgow if you hadn't come to do a stint with us on Ouch?
I would have done, but mainly because I'm interested in swimming. So I used to be a swimmer when I was younger. So I kind of vaguely keep across swimming. And because I know Ellie Simmons, or not personally, but I know her name and I know what she's achieved, I would be intrigued. And also, it has had huge prominence, sort of certainly on the BBC Sport website. And because it has been so dramatic. Other sports, not so much. I mean, the London Marathon last week, well done to anyone and everyone who took part.
Yeah.
It was really exciting with the wheelchair race. We were hoping to get a win, but we think we got third in the end in the wheelchair. So I'll maybe keep across that and some of the general athletics, but other sports I'm afraid I'm not up on or interested in. But yeah, I mean, I don't really sort of see a huge division between the Olympics and Paralympics. And I think it's got such a high profile now that it's really good. And many years ago, I went to the Commonwealth Games in Manchester, which I think was 2002. And me and my family went to sort of the big athletics final, and interspersed with all the regular events, we had the sprints for the visually impaired runners, which was just amazing. And honestly, everyone was excited to see them, as I think Colin Jackson was running that night, and everything like that. So yeah, as long as it's good sport, and it is the drama as well. Mm. It's the world records. Yeah. It's the close but not almost, not quite winning.
Yeah.
All that.
That's almost it for Inside Out. But first, Lee Kumutat, next week's podcast looks like quite an interesting one. Tell us a bit about that.
We are going to be looking at all things related to cooking and disability. Well, as many as we can fit in between 53 and 55 minutes. So it's about practical tips and tricks in relation to cooking with a disability. And that will involve looking at budget, cooking cheaply, trying to get people to, if they love their microwave, maybe step away from the microwave and look at the hob. So it's a range of people that are basically passionate about food and cooking and disability. So it should be a lot of fun.
Sounds like it will be a lot of fun. Listen to that next week. That'll be out next Friday. You can find us on Facebook. We're on Twitter at BBC Ouch. You can email us ouch@bbc.co.uk, and you can find all the disability stories at bbc.co.uk/news/disability. Bye, Beth Rose.
Goodbye.
Bye, Lee Kumutat.
See you later, Emma.
Bye.